from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Let's go now. You fired the first shot. Let's go, man.
Jason Leisure.
I'm here in the studio at The Score. This is a very, very special honor for you.
There's reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times.
HITS, they all stand for try hard. So for the coaches, it's now H is for, hey, don't do that. I is for, I wouldn't do that if I were you. T is for, that's a bad thing to do. And S is for, stop, you're fired.
I don't know if I really look at it that way, Jay.
Jason Leisure with Bernstein and Holmes on The Score.
Bears preseason coverage is presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Jason Leisure is on Twitter at Jason Leisure. He's with us on the Circus Sports Hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today, Circus Sports Illinois. He is also on twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score, and he is taunting the Bears rookie star quarterback by wearing his Tulane hat at press conferences. Hello, Jason Leisure.
Man, Caleb Williams does not forget, apparently. I forgot that he played in that game because I, for some reason, was thinking he was too young, but he definitely played, and he was a monster in the Cotton Bowl. It was the end of his Heisman season, and Tulane beat them for probably their biggest win they've ever had on a last second touchdown. Not Caleb Williams' fault, though.
No, but it definitely wasn't his fault.
He remembered, though, when I showed up wearing my Tulane hoodie or something the other day. He didn't like that.
Jason, we had fun or tried to have fun with the Mastroli draft in this previous segment, but it is a fair question. Who do you think stands to benefit the most from the starters not playing today?
You mean on the Bears?
Yes.
I don't know what you were referring to in the Mastroli draft. What is that?
Yeah, we give out the Ken Mastroli Award. It's the eponymous former Bears training camp overachieving quarterback.
Oh, I see.
Who is never going to make the roster, but we find somebody on the fringes who we expect is going to have an outstanding game, and then we award that honor afterward.
The people I picked played too much football.
I took Freddie Swain because I think it's a Freddie Swain kind of night.
Not that I'm saying you should pick that individual, but it did make me wonder who stands to benefit the most here.
Well, I'm focused on the quarterbacks because there is an actual quarterback competition going on for the number two job between Tyson Bagent and Brett Rippon. And I think they're both going to be on the roster, but you're definitely going to want to know by the end of camp who is going in if needed at the number two spot. So I think those guys are both going to play a lot, and there's going to be, not just tonight, but throughout the preseason games, there's going to be a lot of evaluation of Bagent and Rippon.
I feel like that's the main storyline in this, but also figuring out how they're going to manage that like throughout the season as well with roster spot.
Well, you can keep three quarterbacks, and I would think you'd have a decent chance getting Rippon through waivers eventually to put on your practice squad.
Not Bagent?
I don't think they'd want to chance it with Bagent. He's so young and there has been some potential. I couldn't imagine them wanting to bail out on that potential either way. Even if they felt like Rippon was the better option right now as a number two quarterback, and he has that history with Shane Waldron, obviously, I don't think they would want. I think they still see a lot of good trajectory for Bagent.
It is kind of the messed up part about this. Not that you would see anything in an extra preseason game, but the fact that these two teams play in week two, from a scheduling standpoint, is probably the worst team that the Bears could have started the preseason against.
Yeah, and Lawrence, that is because the Hall of Fame always picks teams that are being represented in the enshrinement, and they could have picked other teams. I just, yeah, that is frustrating when you have them playing so early in the season too. I saw a couple of years ago though, somebody finished the preseason. I think it was like the Colts and the Bengals, something like that, finished the preseason against each other and then played each other week one. So at least it's not as bad as that. That was probably 5 years ago or so. But yeah, that's another reason not to play anybody in this game. Don't even give Houston a direct in-person look at, you know, some of your tendencies. You're going to call vanilla offense. You're going to call very basic plays on both sides of the ball, but don't even give them a hint of something that might help them in week two.
Do we know anything more about whether or not this offense is going to make use of a fullback?
No, I don't know much about that right now, but they've got so many other options and, you know, it's going to probably depend on the offensive line. I think ideally you wouldn't want to use that because you want to get as many of these playmakers on the field as possible. When you've got three top line receivers, we think you've got multiple threats at tight end and Komet and Everett. And you've got, I think, three very good running backs. I think Khalil Herbert is a really good weapon for them. And as many of those guys as you can get on the field at the same time, the better, instead of having a fullback out there.
Jason, we spent a lot of time this morning talking about the new kickoff rule. I'm curious, what does it look like in practice, and what's on your list of notes to watch it out live tonight?
Just everything. I mean, how is it covered? How is it received? How does the kicker play it? What are the outcomes of this? Is the first look that anyone in the NFL is getting at how this will play out with not just NFL athletes, but NFL special teams coordinators who are scheming to find every advantage in this. And anytime there's something new, whether it's on the field or whether you look at college football and talk about NIL money, man, the people that adapt the fastest, the people that pick it up the fastest, are the ones that can exploit that and get ahead of everybody. And then eventually everybody catches up and it just becomes normal. It helps the Bears that Richard Hightower was at the forefront of designing this rule.
It does help the Bears. So how much have you been able to see in practice of this, if at all?
Oh, some, but it's just, you're not going to know till you get in the game. I mean, they're not going full speed most of the time in practice. And you have, it's gone a little back and forth when they've been trying it out. Like there've been some guys getting through and there's been some good coverage by the Bears special teams, but you're really not going to know until you see a bunch of NFL teams do it. The whole, man, that is the number one thing, Layla, that people around the league will be watching tonight is what do the Bears and Texans do with this new kickoff rule? And then next week you'll get a full slate of games where you'll see what everybody's doing with it. And that might be another thing where you don't want to show too much of your tricks or your schemes or whatever in that as a special teams coordinator, but you're at least going to see a little bit of how the format plays out and the things you're going to have to be mindful of as the kicking team and the receiving team.
I'm convinced that this rule morphs and changes throughout the season. And I know that that's a difficult thing to do to try and get the owners on it. I just think that it's so much of a departure that a lot of people are going to struggle with it, and they're going to make it simpler before the season is done.
Yeah, that is possible. I mean, I don't think they can change the rule itself during the season, but they can do little things such as, you know, just maybe some slight modifications if everybody's on board with it. And they could have it officiated a little differently. They can emphasize the officiating on different parts of it as it goes. But if you think about it, Lawrence, they don't really have a way to test this out other than implementing it. You can't just test this out in the preseason and say, well, we're going to try this out in the 2024 preseason. But then when the regular season starts, we're going back to the old kickoff rule. I mean, you're not going to get teams fully preparing for just doing it in the preseason, and you're not going to get real evidence of how it's going to work doing it that way.
I wouldn't be surprised, though, if that ends up happening. And that's not from anything that anyone's told
me. If they change it?
I would not be surprised if we get through all of the preseason games and the NFL is like, well, that didn't work. We're going to go back to the old way.
Oh, really?
It would not surprise me.
That would surprise me. What would not surprise me, though, would be, you know, if you think back to a few years ago when they really dug in on quarterback hits.
Yes.
Probably about 8 to 10 years ago, they started changing some of the, you know, body weight rule. Like if you put you know, such percent of your body weight on the quarterback when you hit him, things like that, which obviously the refs are just eyeballing. You could have different little points of emphasis that get stressed during the season if this is producing wildly unpredicted results.
Jason, I think part of the frustrating part of this from watching and just wanting to see something that you can evaluate outside of the obvious with this game is trying to see how much of anything we're going to learn about Shane Waldron or even some adjustments that Matt Eberflus is going to make when it comes to the coordinating piece of this. How much do you think you can gather from what you're actually going to see tonight?
I don't think that you can.
Right.
I don't think they want you to, and I don't think that they're going to want you to gather much of that going forward either in the other three preseason games. Once we get to next week's preseason game at Buffalo, at least what you'll get to see is some personnel, and that's really all you ever are looking at in the preseason is how does so-and-so look? Is Roma Dunze open on every play? Is Caleb Williams making quick decisions when they do ask him to pass? Does your offensive line, if you get all five starters out there, are they sturdy and able to protect Caleb Williams?
Well, and even with the cadence discussion that has been off and on, you can't really glean much of that even in the next game either. Bajan's a different story. We've seen him before. We know how he works with this group, and we know how he works with a lot of the line, you know, whether that's backups or people we know what might be starters. So that piece of it isn't concerning to me. It's just the things that we've seen. You're not going to be able to gather what you want out of this except for maybe just an elevated practice look.
Yeah, you're right, Layla. They're not going to want to show, especially against Houston. They're not going to want to show anything cadence-wise. They're not going to want to do anything exotic or tricky or anything out of the ordinary against the team they're going to see in a month.
Well, what ended up happening with yesterday's practice? Because if we knew that, you know, there were not going to be any starters, how would you describe yesterday's practice then? Was it a little bit more physical because the starters weren't going to play? Or were they just like, hey, put your gear on, let's run through some drills, and then let's go to Canton?
I'm not going to BS you. I worked from home yesterday.
Okay, not a problem.
Very rarely does that happen, but it did happen yesterday.
I wanted to circle back to something we talked about several weeks ago, and especially with all the attention that's going to be paid to one of his great former players. Are you hearing anything about any involvement from Mike Ditka, whether it's something recorded or something else?
Yeah, well, Dan, he's not going to be present in either Ohio or Homer Glen, from what I've been told by several people at this point. It's interesting that you have this coming together, this celebration, reunion, this big win for the 85 Bears, and their Hall of Fame iconic coach is not going to really be around it. What I've been told about Mike Ditka is that at this point, he lives down in Naples, Florida, and at this point, he's not traveling a lot. And it's not that, and it is out of health concerns, it's not that he is ill necessarily, but he's 84 years old and he lives in Florida, and it's not easy. You know, he's a hard 84 too, when you think about the fact that, you know, of what he did for a living playing football. Mike Ditka is just not really up for traveling at this point.
Jason, have fun this weekend. Thank you so much for your coverage.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jason.
That is Jason Leisure. And when we come back, you have something about gymnastics that has applications elsewhere?
Yes. To put it a little more like tease friendly, I should say. So there's a story that came out in the Washington Post talking about the culture of gymnastics that applies to not only what you're seeing right now with the USA team, but also how it was changed. And there are some parallels that directly apply. So I want everybody to take a listen, because I think that it shows you how to get through the bad. And I think that that's important. It's next on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. An Odyssey Station.
What is your team name?
What's your team name?
It's nice to hear the women's gymnastics team who got gold again.
The Golden Girls.
Correct. Speak with a sense of joy and relief. And
Thank you for being a friend, by the way.
Traveled down the road and back again.
Damn right.
Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
Isn't that the truest thing, though?
It really is. And it's been fun to watch, to say the absolute least. But it's easy to see the joy and the relief that is on each individual's gymnast faces after what happened in Tokyo 3 years ago. And it got me thinking about Jordan Chiles' floor routine, which was choreographed to Beyonce. It was a Beyonce mashup. It's a Beyonce instrumental. Simone Biles does the one with Taylor Swift to intro. Chiles is also a UCLA gymnast.
And they changed the game.
They did change the game. And that's what I want to discuss. So I was trying to find one of Chiles' previous floor routines after we saw the qualifying on Sunday night. And it got me to, of course, go down a deep rabbit hole. And a Washington Post article by Liz Clark from 2019. And the headline says, "Still reeling from scandal, gymnastics rediscovers joy at UCLA." And the reason why I want to discuss it is not just because of how well written it is, but because of the cultures of abuse that we have seen in various sports. We talk so much about the bad part, as we should, but sometimes maybe we don't also focus on a plan on how to get out. And one quote in particular, this is at the end, rung true with me, and it also rang true of what we have spoken about before in other sports. So this is something that I would like to address, because to see people working through their issues in real time and then going back to competitions that provided them with stress. Think about your entire dream and how the only way you thought you could succeed was by surviving this abuse. And maybe that's not something that we discuss as much as well as that we should. It's the quote from Kalia Ohashi, who has gone viral for her floor routines as well.
Caitlin.
Thank you. She says, "It's not the sport that's bad. It was the culture. It was the people that were allowed into it. Stuff happened in every sport. Every sport can become abusive. It just so happens that this was a mass thing that almost defined the sport. But it's not an abusive sport. It's a beautiful sport. And there's not one way that gymnastics can work." If that's not something that can't be established in other sports cultures, I certainly think it can be.
Well, tell that to the team that wants to hire Joel Quenneville or the Edmonton Oilers that just hired Stan Bowman.
That's the quote at the end of the story. But it also talks about Caitlin and her journey through trying to get through the stress and the pain of gymnastics to make it fun again. And she worked with the UCLA now coach who has retired. They have a new head coach now. Their current head coach, his name is Janelle McDonald. But the previous head coach they had there was one that they knew would help them work their way through this, Valerie Kondos Field. And how she tried to really put an emphasis on doing what they want to do that's fun. And I think that it's really important to see. She has this quote that I think is really important as well. Planting seeds to build trust. She says the whole point of coaching is teaching. Teaching is letting people make decisions for themselves. And if they're not making the right decision, letting them fail but not disrespecting them and not making them afraid to make a mistake again. She said in an interview, in her office, which is furnished with a golden sofa that once belonged to John Wooden.
That's pretty cool.
She says you can train champions to the highest level without demeaning them, disrespecting them, and taking away their joy. You absolutely can.
And doesn't it feel like as part of this story in the inside of the Olympics is with Simone Biles, is that beyond the anxiety that clearly happened to her in the last Olympics, that it feels like we're watching joy again on her face. And obviously, she's a fierce competitor. She's one of the greatest American athletes that's ever lived. But seeing her with her teammates and the joy that she's getting in them accomplishing what they're accomplishing and what she's done, and the fact that her and Childs, Jordan Childs, they didn't let the game age them out.
Correct.
Because you wouldn't think that Simone's a 27?
27.
That she would even be in gymnastics because it's such a young sport. Now, granted, we're talking about the greatest that's ever done it. But the fact that she was like, you know what? I'll just go. I'll just keep grinding and I'll go. I think that there was a lot of joy in trying to get back there for her.
And I feel like that is the case for not just her, but the entire culture of USA Gymnastics. When you try to see what works, look to another program for an example, and maybe one that doesn't have as much on the line as they tend to not have in college gymnastics, even though, of course, it's important to their titles. But the way UCLA was able to not just change what they were doing in choreography and music and how they were able to show more personality and what they were able to do, but to let people have that for themselves so they were able to use it at an advantage for moving forward in life.
Can I give you another name that we should add to the list?
Of course.
Gabby Douglas. Because Gabby Douglas's experience was not great either. And she kind of went away. And she didn't make it to the Olympic qualifier, but she put herself back in competition. And I remember an interview with her and her saying, I really love doing this. So I wanted to go back and do it. And I think she's younger than Biles. Let me look that up.
I think the point to be made about the culture of a sport is one that resonates with me. Whether or not it's all the horrible things that happened
with
the Blackhawks or what happened with Pat Fitzgerald's Northwestern teams, that champions can be made without debasing them, without abusing them, without breaking them down to build them back up. You don't need Pat Fitzgerald's culture of hazing and racism. You don't need what is still too existent in hockey culture. And that line, can you read that one line again where it's not the athletes or it's not about it is about the culture of the sport? Because I thought that's the one that should be on a plaque in a locker room.
Well, and that's the one that made me think of you when I read this.
That's so material to this. We always think of these individuals in these sports where they, at 8 years old, they fly away to Caroli Ranch. To me, this is an indictment of the accepted power structure in gymnastics that started in America when Bella Caroli came over from Romania.
Abuse is always about power, Dan. It's about control.
And while it happened in gymnastics, you've given the examples of how it happens in other sports too. And I don't think that breaking people down to build them up is necessarily bad, but it's in how you do it. And it shouldn't be through physical or mental abuse. There is the idea of you're trying to explain to someone, for example, we were talking earlier with Michael Kopech. Hey, do you know that you could be better? Yeah, how? Well, if you did this. And then he doesn't do it. And the game says, you should probably think about doing what your coaches said.
Well, but similar to, and, Kopech, as we know, has a life that has revolved around baseball all his life. And that is the culture of youth sports now, especially if you want to play as a professional. And one of the big pieces of this was Coach Condosfield asking Ohashi, when was the last time you were happy?
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she said when she was 11 years old, before this became a real career path for her.
When we talk about youth sports, and we had a discussion last week about youth sports, that's the part that I find heartbreaking. I mean, and as we continue to ask kids to do more and more and more, there needs to be a, hey, are you having fun? Is this fun? Because it might not be fun. Getting up at 5 o'clock when you're 12 years old is not fun. Playing three games in a day can be fun, but it feels a little bit more like you're turning it into work. You're turning it into a chore, and you're turning it into an end game instead of just allowing people to play and then figuring out, I'm going to get serious about this, 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 or this.
And in this case, when you consider they're children still, relatively. A college student at 18 or 19 says the last time they were happy was 8 years ago. That's almost half their life.
Yep.
And that's really disturbing. You can't spend half your life feeling this way. The culture of abuse that happened in women's gymnastics should be felt with trauma and shame, because that's how you move through it. But when you have breakthroughs like this and you see the positive results like what we're seeing, it's nice that you can understand that there's a process here that gives positive results to people.
The other part, too, when it comes to coaching specifically, is what were the influences on the coaches themselves? And do they misidentify the success of an athlete with coaching that the athlete would have been successful if you'd have done it another way?
Right.
And they go, well, it worked for blank, or this is how I was raised in the sport. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're adjusting to what the times are, or that you understand the psyche of the athlete. And I feel like it's dangerous. And most people, it's weird because you know that most people, I would say a large majority of people who get into coaching, get into it with the best intention, even if they aren't the best coaches. You know, they're going, well, someone needs to, and I want to help young people live out their dreams and have fun. But when there is some success that is attached to it or becomes necessary, or there's a monetary part of it, then it becomes, well, I've got to do this so that we can win. And it becomes less about the athlete. Now, at the Olympic level, clearly we are talking about people who are motivated to win at the highest level. So you understand that there's a level of dedication, but that doesn't mean that you can't still treat them as people, that they're not commodities, they're people.
And when you do that, look at how they flourish. And that was my point, is UCLA is known for their creative choreography. They're known for their routines that go viral. They're known for bringing in popular music. They're known for changing the game. And in doing so, they healed people.
I hope that the carrot and the possibilities that tantalize coaches and parents never outweigh the need of the person and the desire of the athlete. And there's a commercial that's running now, and I forgot, pardon me, I'm sorry that I don't remember exactly who the sponsor is.
I think it's Hyundai, if it's the same one where I'm thinking about.
Is it Hyundai where they show kids who aren't happy?
Yes,
that's
Hyundai.
And it shows a parent. That's Hyundai.
Yeah.
It's
I texted it to you guys.
It's great.
It's okay to take a break.
It's great. Well, more than that, it's like, are you enjoying yourself? And these are kids working and working and working. Show them getting up early and going to the pool early and chalking up their hands and all that. And I think eventually the gymnast runs off on a soccer field with a huge smile on her face. And it's that where I had not seen that sentiment used in any way, whether it was a public service announcement or whether it was something. But the fact that Hyundai would do that and just say, hey, this is nice and good and right, I thought was cool.
And it was specifically produced for this the Olympics. Yeah.
Because it needs to resonate with people who are watching who might be afraid to say something.
Absolutely.
And I also want to say this. In that last quote that we talked about, it is okay to embrace part of this is bad. I think so many times people don't know how to handle their shame. They don't know how to handle the grief. They don't know how to handle the sadness. It's okay to say something that the culture here is bad, but the sport is good. So let's focus on that as a way through. Like, don't lose sight of what good comes from acknowledging that part of it in a way that doesn't make people not want to do it because of how bad they might feel.
It's so hard too, because you can look at all of the things that happen to you, and sometimes like you compartmentalize and think of like all the good, like how great it is to when you see a former teammate, or what it was like to be a part of two-a-days and being in it. In my case, like with your brothers, but or your sisters, like and being in it and the things that are shared in those moments, the what you learn about yourself and other people and how to push yourself and what ends up being positive reinforcement of things. And some of the stuff that you lived through that was wild and you think, wow, like we survived that. And recognizing that it may have been traumatic, but we survived it, and there's this shared history with it too. Now, what we're talking about with gymnastics is the worst possible scenario.
Unspeakable.
Right? With this.
Heartbreaking, to say the least.
Those things that are closer to the other edge of that spectrum, there is trauma bonding. Right.
Yes.
That happens. And but I always hate it when I feel like I'm watching. There's nothing better than seeing people smiling when they're playing sports.
That's what I was talking to Kim Eng about yesterday. The difference between baseball and softball in that regard. That's always noticeable.
There's an energy level too that goes on inside of softball that culturally.
Yes.
You know, yeah, I mean, they're always cheering during games. That starts when you're, you know, a child.
They smile more.
And it's part of the reason that I hate some of the fun policing that goes on at the high school, college, and even the professional level. Scoring a goal is hard. Scoring a touchdown is hard.
Have your silly Southside jacket in the dugout because you want to celebrate a home run.
Well, maybe change the jacket.
But to me, the point is like have that sense of humor. But I just have heard so many times us talk about as a show all of the bad, and I appreciate that we do. And it's okay to take a break, and look what happens when you do.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a way how. Here's a way how to get through it that's productive. And I just really appreciated that piece of it and what we're seeing and the positive changes, not just for one culture, but for many in this.
That's Layla Rahimi in on this Thursday instead of a Wednesday here on the Bernstein and Holmes show.
You can watch her at 4,
5, 6, 9 on our streaming channel, 10 and in the morning on NBC5.
So she's got to go because she's got, you know. Here's- Bears.
I have to return the bears.
I don't know. I kind of want you to keep them now.
Oh, no. No.
No.
They have served their plot purpose.
Bears.
The bears.
And maybe I should carry them as an albatross for not doing better in the Mastroni draft, whatever.
Bears, nobody's going to do good in that. It's okay.
Yeah, I know. You and I were like, I don't like picking on people, too.
You're not. You're hoping.
You're rooting for them.
Yeah, you're hoping that they're going to come through and get their chance and put something on film that maybe another team will see.
Bears Petras.
When we
Bears
come back.
Bears Petras, for sure.
Bears Machine.
What do we say? When Keon Coleman provides us with something fun and interesting, it's
No. that ended up, the audio ended up not being good enough. We have a Bernstein and Holmes entry for one of our bits.
Okay.
Okay. I'm in.
That's it's one of our favorites.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2, on Sports Radio 670 The Score. In Odyssey Station, Odyssey Station, Odyssey Station.
Join Parkins and Spiegel next Tuesday from 2 to 6 p.m. at The Wall in Marcus Gurney Cinema to register to win prizes and tickets and enjoy specials on food and beverages all day. Then at 8 p.m., enjoy the premiere of Hard Knocks on The Wall's big screen. Admission, it's always free at The Wall.
That sounds like a fun time.
Hell yeah.
Everyone gets to watch Hard Knocks together.
Yep.
And we will have our bingo cards ready for people on Monday.
They'll be able to play the bingo card that we're going to put together.
And then a week from today, we are going to have NFL Films producer Pat Harris, who is working on Hard Knocks, on this show.
I love
talk
it.
Talk about Bears Hard Knocks.
Bears.
Bears.
Bear.
What do we have, studs?
And the kick behind her.
My bad, I pressed the wrong button there. So I want to set this up, because this is going to be the final stretch of Katie Ledecky's 1500 dominance. And I want you to listen closely, because there's going to be something we're going to pick out of here.
Okay.
And the kick behind her, she knows this is her 8th Olympic gold medal.
25 meters left for Ledecky to make more history. Won the gold in Tokyo. Is going to back it up again here in Paris. And the greatest swimming machine we've ever seen rolls on to another gold here in Paris with a new Olympic record.
All right, everyone caught it, right?
Swimming machine. You're right.
Oh, that's a new you're right, by the way. That's David Haw. I heard it, and I immediately texted Studs. I heard it during one of the segments earlier this week. David Haw with the very clear, you're right.
The crazy thing about Ledecky in the 1500 is the other swimmers were swimming in her wake. Because she was going the other direction.
Did you see when she touched the wall, not the wall in Gurnee, when she touched the wall,
they weren't in the frame.
Nobody was in the picture.
Yeah, they had to widen out.
But think about, from a TV perspective, they were able, the director was able to cut to the close-up of her looking up and cut to the crowd, cut back to her, and then back to the pool for silver and bronze.
Yep. That's how much time she had in between her and the closest competitor.
Swimming machine.
Because she's a swimming machine.
Parkinson's.
You're right.
Will join us next.
You're right.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2, on Sports Radio 670 The Score. In Odyssey Station, Odyssey Station, Odyssey Station.
Join Parkins and Spiegel next Tuesday from 2 to 6 p.m. at The Wall in Marcus Gurney Cinema to register to win prizes and tickets and enjoy specials on food and beverages all day. Then at 8 p.m., enjoy the premiere of Hard Knocks on The Wall's big screen. Admission, it's always free at The Wall.
That sounds like a fun time.
Hell yeah.
Everyone gets to watch Hard Knocks together.
Yep.
And we will have our bingo cards ready for people on Monday.
They'll be able to play the bingo card that we're going to put together.
And then a week from today, we are going to have NFL Films producer Pat Harris, who is working on Hard Knocks, on this show.
I love
talk
it.
About Bears Hard Knocks.
Bears.
Bears.
Bear.
What do we have, studs?
And the kick behind her.
My bad, I pressed the wrong button there. So I want to set this up, because this is going to be the final stretch of Katie Ledecky's 1500 dominance. And I want you to listen closely, because there's going to be something we're going to pick out of here.
Okay.
And the kick behind her, she knows this is her 8th Olympic gold medal.
25 meters left for Ledecky to make more history. Won the gold in Tokyo. Is going to back it up again here in Paris. And the greatest swimming machine we've ever seen rolls on to another gold here in Paris with a new Olympic record.
All right, everyone caught it, right?
Swimming machine.
Swimming machine.
You're right.
Oh, that's a new You're Right, by the way. That's David Haw. I heard it, and I immediately texted Studs. I heard it during one of the segments earlier this week. David Haw with the very clear, You're Right.
The crazy thing about Ledecky in the 1500 is the other swimmers were swimming in her wake. Because she was going the other direction.
Did you see when she touched the wall, not the wall in Gurnee, when she touched the wall,
they weren't in the frame.
Nobody was in the picture.
Yeah, they had to widen out.
But think about from a TV perspective, they were able, the director was able to cut to the close-up of her looking up and cut to the crowd, cut back to her, and then back to the pool for silver and bronze.
Yep. That's how much time she had in between her and the closest competitor.
Swimming machine.
Because she's a swimming machine.
Parkinson's.
You're right.
Will join us next.
You're right.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.